Hey, welcome to Politico Tech. Today's Wednesday, May 22nd. I'm Stephen Overly. President Biden and former President Trump are battling on the campaign trail to prove who is tougher on China. And last week, Biden made his latest argument, announcing he would ramp up tariffs on some Chinese-made goods, like electric vehicles and solar cells, and also keep Trump-era tariffs in place on billions of dollars in other products. Biden's sales pitch to voters is that his administration is not only pouring billions into U.S. manufacturing, but trying to protect those American-made products against cheap foreign imports. And while this may be a trade war, tech is really at the center of it all, from clean technologies to microchips. Jen Harris was a key architect of Biden's foreign and economic policy, serving as the White House Senior Director of International Economics from 2021 to 2023. During that time, she was a key voice in steering Biden's economic agenda away from some of the global norms that have dictated U.S. trade policy for decades, including longtime rules and customs laid out by the World Trade Organization. That change has really set the stage for the actions Biden is now taking. I called up Jen for today's show to talk about how U.S. trade policy toward China has evolved and how Biden should be selling that agenda to voters. Here's our conversation. Jen, welcome to Politico Tech.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So I want to go back. You worked at the State Department during the Obama years when, you know, free trade was still this kind of guiding force in U.S. foreign policy. I'm curious, sort of, what would the Jen Harris of that time think about the approach to trade with China that the Biden administration is taking today?
I think she'd be pretty relieved and a little bit shocked that so much of the world seems to have come around. You know, I really spent a lot of those days in the Obama administration, the State Department, calling for much tougher, more capable enforcement of these supposed global rules. And it really felt as if we, you know, the U.S., the alleged kind of global superpower, were essentially asking nicely without much in the way of a credible plan for leverage or pressure. You know, to me, like the idea that we could have ended up anywhere but where we have is a little bit magical thinking. And it's just a question of the how of that, right? Like, I think it went a lot bumpier than it could have had we. There was a stitch in time quality to the Obama administration in those days that, like, had we sort of ratcheted up the pressure faster, more assertively, I think it would have given people like Donald Trump less room to just, like, prosecute that case that we saw him prosecute back in the 2016 campaign.
Right. Well, the U.S. trade policy has just evolved so dramatically since that time. It sounds like sort of you're saying more folks have kind of caught up with some of your own thinking around how we need to economically approach China. I was curious if your views had evolved along with it as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of why you didn't see that more assertive pressure in the Obama administration is that, like, the rules just were not written so as to anticipate the phenomenon of China, right? It's not as if in those days you had a kind of cadre of USTR types who were just sitting in the Winter Building twiddling their thumbs or worried about bringing a kind of bet the farm case on China. It's like they couldn't win that case because, you know, the way that China had formulated a lot of its economic policies that were kind of most problematic was, like, precisely getting around the kind of on paper de jure rules of the WTO. And I think I just kind of came to the realization that the system is kind of has some fatal flaws in it, and that it didn't anticipate the two major problems of the day, one being China, the other being climate change. I think you've broadly seen a kind of consensus settle out in Washington across both major political parties that we are developing our own set of understandings and rules, so to speak, outside of the WTO system. And not for nothing. I don't see that the sun's still rising in the east. The sky hasn't fallen.
Right.
Actually, I think the trade dynamics between the U.S. and China are relatively stable, obviously with a higher baseline of tariffs. I think that that's, like, a good thing. I think it's part of, like, laying down some of those basic protections that we've needed needed to see for a while.
Well, yeah, the Biden administration has conducted this lengthy review of Trump-era tariffs on China, and last week essentially concluded that it would keep those in place and expand them in some sort of critical sectors on critical goods, like electric vehicles and solar cells. Do you view that as the right outcome here?
Yeah, I do. A few things. I'm going to knock down some straw men here that have been made over the last week or 10 days.
Let me hear it.
Yeah. So look, you know, I've modeled like different permutations of these revised 301 tariffs. This was an exercise that we were very much running during my time in the White House.
Right.
When inflation was north of 8%, we were looking for every basis point in the couch cushions. And so we needed to have comfort that the various scenarios that we were looking at in terms of rejiggering the 301 tariffs with China, even, you know, back in 2021, 2022, would not be stoking inflation. And working with some of the best economists in the country and CEA and the U.S. Treasury Department and elsewhere, like, I had that comfort. And where these tariffs have landed is actually in a fairly surgical, targeted place, meaning, you know, you haven't seen broad escalations on, you know, bicycles and all the other non-strategic
right.
stuff that we buy from China. This really is cabined to a set of industries that we want to vie for in terms of who's making and serving these goods for the U.S. market, as well as possibly, dare say, become export competitive in as well.
I'm curious, in your view, how tech fits in here, because I kind of think of nowadays of so much of our trade war with China as a war as being kind of a tech war. If you look at what our critical sectors are, they're, you know, underpinned by technology. If you include things like domestic investments in export controls on chips, how does that complicate or affect at all sort of the approach we take here with China?
It's a great question. And I do think that it presents a bit of a kind of fork in the road. I think we need to decide whether we do all that needs doing in the kind of techno-economics of building out green supply chains. But that's the perimeter of that exercise. And we have another table and another negotiation that is doing the kind of securing of our technology, or whether we really are trying to kind of pull both of these two strands, and there may be other strands, right, under one umbrella. You know, it really, I think, not to be too pedestrian about it, but I, the way that I would answer it, if, you know, it were my question to answer, is to really sit down and look at like what's hard on each side. You've got to know your counterparties first. If you are going to marry things like a lot of the export controls on technology and chip sufficiency with the kind of green supply chain effort, you've got to kind of know who you're negotiating with first to understand like whether that's a feature or a bug in their kind of political calculus, kind of which gets back to the fact that like geopolitics is again driving the train on a lot of this stuff. And, you know, maybe you kind of pick your friends first based on, you know, underlying values alignment, and then figure out kind of whether one deal or two on these issue sets is preferable.
I mean, speaking of the geopolitics, you know, I wonder if you were still in the administration and kind of gaming out how China might retaliate to some of these latest tariff moves and things. What would be your top concern? And would you see, you know, the tech sector in particular as perhaps vulnerable?
My sense is that we still have a pain point around legacy chips, and that we may not have spent quite enough money in the first CHIPS Act for some of those legacy kind of commodity chips. So I think that there may be some logic to going back to the well on either a Biden 2 or a Trump administration for a little bit more money for legacy chips. I think the other area that I would point to is where AI is headed and whether there's a virtue in, you know, some de minimis sort of rules around the kind of basic economics of the leading companies in technology. I'm skeptical that that's an exercise the U.S. can fruitfully run with Europe, just given Europe's quite distinctive approach to regulation and the fact that they've already kind of come out of the gate with, you know, sort of the old trope of the U.S. innovates and Europe regulates. And then I think the third area where I think the U.S. would want to find friends is in its most recent moves around kind of smart cars and grid, kind of where we see like real security vulnerabilities thanks to the possibilities of that technology has opened up.
I'm curious, you know, we look ahead here, we have an election coming up in November, and I wonder how you see that factoring into this, because as we've discussed, there are some similarities between Biden and Trump and how they've approached some of these trade issues, but certainly some differences as well, including some of these industrial policies. So I wonder what impact you think November and that outcome could have.
Maybe I'm going to draw it in caricature here. I apologize. But I think it doesn't need to be much more complicated than, you know, taking a lot of Trump's tariff proposals at face value, like believe him when he says he's going to try to go for a 10% tariff across the board or whatever. Right. And so, you know, no surprise. I do think that there's a pretty big difference between that kind of a world and the world that I think the Biden administration is pretty clearly trying to take us into of really picking some strategic industries that we know to be growth oriented in terms of like where hydrogen is today versus where it needs to be if we're good, anybody is to get on the right side of their 2050 climate targets and making a go for them. And, you know, I think the message behind some of these actions that kind of just taking the latest Biden tariffs could stand to be sharpened a little bit. It's a little unstable as to whether it's overdetermined, just kind of what the story is, but worth kind of parsing more clearly how much of this is about calling China to account for a set of economic practices that are, you know, flouting rules that they themselves signed up to, really dating over the past 20 years, you know, since 2001 entry into the WTO. So how much of this is really about holding China to account for its own practices that we don't like versus making the investments of things like the bipartisan infrastructure law and the IRA one side of a single coin, the other side being kind of buying time for those industries in the U.S. to kind of take root. It's a little bit unclear in the messaging, and it probably does matter for our success in bringing other countries along with us.
Well, that's my last question for you was going to be around, you know, the messaging here, because you and others I know did a lot of reflecting after Trump's win in 2016 about how trade policy has, you know, alienated some middle class voters and how to bring them in and message to them. What is the message that you think will resonate? And are there lessons that you learned coming out of 2016 that would maybe apply today?
Sure. I think it's a deeply pragmatic one. It's really to kind of throw out broad ideologies that, you know, reflexively come down the side of free trade or not free trade in favor of like the actual problems that we're solving for and we're and backing out solutions to those problems, right? And to me, like the big change here has been a willingness of the Biden administration to say, hey, we need to build stuff again. We haven't done that in 50 years. And place that as the kind of overarching aim that will guide a whole bunch of our kind of policy intuitions downstream of that. So what does it mean to kind of go be in the business of building things again? It means that you got to, you know, like pass some permitting reform and make some hard choices about, you know, laws that were well-intentioned, but may have maybe weaponized right now from people who are not in the habit of or desire of building houses or transmission lines, right? So it's just it's really a kind of much more problem-oriented approach to issues that have, for at least the last, you know, 40 years, been handled in a much more bright line kind of ideological way. And I think the other important piece of this, you know, in terms of the messaging question you're asking, is to, you know, kind of own up to the imperfections and the problems of the kind of rules that, in some ways, we set out for ourselves in the world and that we've been living under. Insofar as like China had the ability to find holes in, you know, WTO rules to, you know, build subsidy machines that are producing the EVs that are flooding global markets. If we were to just sit on our hands in the face of that, it feels like committing policy malpractice twice. Mm-hmm. Right? So I think that's the other piece of it is kind of like being a little willing to own up to the failures of the kind of architecture to meet the problems of the day to day.
Well, listen, Jen, great insights. Appreciate you joining us on Politico Tech.
Great. Thanks for having me.
That's all for today's Politico Tech. For more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Music in today's episode comes from the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our managing producer is Annie Reese. Our producer is Afra Abdullah. And our editors are Steve Heuser, Daniela Cheslow, and Louisa Savage. I'm Stephen Overley. See you back here tomorrow.